This is Ocean Robbins, here to welcome you to Day 8 in the Food Revolution Summit. This has been an incredible experience for me, for my dad, and for so many people all over the world. We can and we are changing the course of food history. In a few moments, we'll be on the line with New York Times best-selling author and fitness coach J.J. Virgin. At the top of the next hour, we'll hear from Green America Executive Director Elisa Gravitz. And an hour after that, we'll be on with Institute for the Psychology of Eating founder Mark David. Here we go. Welcome to the Food Revolution Summit, where we explore how you can heal your body and your world with food. This is Ocean Robbins, and I am joined by my dad and colleague, John Robbins, in welcoming our guest, J.J. Virgin. J.J. Virgin is a celebrity nutritionist, a fitness expert, and the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Virgin Diet, as well as the recently released Virgin Diet Cookbook. J.J. appeared for 2 years as the nutrition expert on the internationally televised Dr. Phil show. And she's helped millions of people to overcome years of weight loss struggles through her simple, straightforward approach. So now, JJ, my dad and I are so glad that we get to have this time with you. And for the interview, I'm going to hand it over to my dad, John Robbins.
Thank you, Ocean, and thank you, JJ, for being with us. It's really a privilege to have your voice and your wisdom in our summit.
Well, I was so honored when I got invited, I got to tell you. So thank you.
Well, we're honored to have you. I want to begin. There's a fact. The average American today eats 150 pounds of added sugar each year. 150 pounds each year.
And, you know, I know I'm not really eating much, and you're probably not eating much, so there's some people eating a lot more than that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I think
right.
Of how much the average American teenager must be consuming.
Not my teens.
Last year, there were leading neuroscience researchers who published a study showing that refined sugar produces behavioral reactions similar to those produced by cocaine. Another recent peer-reviewed study found that 94% of rats who were allowed to choose between sugar water and cocaine chose sugar. Brain scan studies using functional magnetic resonance imaging have found that high sugar foods stimulate cravings in the brain exactly the same as illicit drugs. JJ, what I want to ask you is, how does someone know if sugar has become their drug of choice, if they've become addicted? And if they have, what can they do to break free from sugar addiction?
And we've got how much time, John? You know, as you were telling those statistics, I was thinking back to a call I got when my kids were in grammar school, and I get this call, and the school says, you need to come pick up your son. And it was, you know, school was not out yet, and I said, oh, why is that? And they go, well, he's crawling up the walls. He's climbing the walls. I go, what do you mean? Why? What happened? They go, well, he won this contest for who could sell the most wrapping paper. So one of his prizes was M&Ms.
Oh.
They gave him.
Oh,
they
my.
Gave it like an 8-year-old a bunch of bags of M&Ms. What happens when you give an 8-year-old a bunch of bags of M&Ms, right? Especially when they're not used to having any of that. So
yeah.
He eats them all and he's climbing the walls. If you really think about it, we're hardwired to seek out sugar because 10,000 years ago during the summer, we needed to eat a lot of fruit and then store a lot of fat so that we could make it through the winter. So we're hardwired to seek out sugar. We also genetically can have a sweet tooth. I'm lucky I don't have one, but I still got one created because I was raised on Pop-Tarts and Captain Crunch. In fact, my nickname growing up was Poppy because I ate so many Pop-Tarts. That was what I had for breakfast every day. And so you can create a sweet tooth, too. You know, you talked about added sugar, but there's added sugar. There's fruit juice. There's dried fruit. There's white bread. So there's a whole lot of stuff out there that's going to have the same impact, even though you might not look at it and think of it as sugar. It all ends up, it's all got the same fate. And if you're eating a diet that's got a high sugar impact, you will end up addicted because your body has to go that way. It's the only way for it to go because, number one, the more sweet you eat, the more sweet you want, especially if you're eating higher fructose sweeteners because they're sweeter, or you're doing artificially sweetened sweeteners because they're 300 times sweeter, it keeps you wanting sweeter and sweeter and sweeter foods, and so you get trapped there. Then you got your biochemistry going where now you're raising blood sugar, raising insulin, and you start to become insulin resistant, so you can't access stored fat, so you become a sugar burner, and you have to have those higher sugar impact foods just to keep your energy up. You get stuck having to have sugar, and then the stress of all of this lowers your serotonin, so you actually start to need to have the sugar to drive serotonin up in your brain to keep that sugar high going. You know, it's like an opiate effect. And then you've got the whole dopamine-driven reward system that this feeds into, and the more of that you get, the more you want. So you just, it gets worse and worse and worse. So, you know, it's clearly addiction, and I will say that I just ran 700 people through my next program, which is all about how to break this, because there's no point in bringing up all bad news, you know, and then say, hey, you've been eating sugar, you're stuck. You can break it, and you actually can break the addiction very quickly. So that's the good news on it, but you're going to have to take it out in order to break it. But I don't believe in this idea of, okay, you're eating a high sugar impact diet, let's pull all of it out and suffer for a week or two. I think that when you do it, the first thing that you must do is become really aware of what you're eating. And that's where a food journal is the most important thing that you can do, because it helps you really see what you're eating. And we use an inventory so people can see the higher sugar impact foods they're eating. And then you taper down over some time. The worse your diet is, the longer the taper might be, or a week or two. And then you really get those foods out. You swap foods. Part of the Virgin Diet is doing these swaps, pulling out, say, if you're eating a lot of sugar, switching into fruit first and then driving down into things like cinnamon and vanilla, but swapping out so that you don't miss those foods. And then retraining your taste buds and reclaiming your sensitivity to sugar so that when you have a little bit, you go, wow, that's sweet, right?
I do, and I used to be very addicted to sugar, and I, growing up, I think my sensory capacity, my taste buds were just bombarded by the amount of sugar I was consuming, and they were numbed by it, and I didn't taste natural sweet things, and I didn't taste much of anything, really, and I think in that way I was fairly typical of people growing up and eating the standard American diet.
Mm-hmm. And it's just gotten worse. I mean, that's how I was raised, too, and if you ask my mom, she would have said that these were all healthy things. They were taught they were healthy. But you look at a lot of the products at the stores nowadays, and they say no sugar added, yet they have fruit juice concentrates. So we're getting duped out there, unfortunately. And, again, when you're eating sweet, you just want more sweet. And like you just said, you can reclaim your natural taste. But if you're eating a lot of sweet, it basically dulls your senses to anything else.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, there are products that are presented as healthier sweeteners. You mentioned fructose a moment ago, and I was thinking about agave nectar, which is very high in fructose, and yet people will use it thinking that it's a much healthier alternative.
It is why I had to write, you know, after I wrote The Virgin Diet, everybody wanted recipes, then I wrote The Virgin Diet Cookbook, but then all the questions I get asked, number one questions are about sugar. So much confusion out there about sugar because you have things like, oh, it just says fruit juice concentrate, or, oh, it's agave. That's good, right? And agave, as you just alluded to, is it's worse than anything else out there. It is worse than high fructose corn syrup because it's higher in fructose. Basically, I look at sugar and it's either fructose or it's glucose because it's going to end up in one of those two places. And fructose is the worst of all because it's metabolized differently. It's going to go straight to the liver. If there's no room for it to move into glycogen storage, basically the majority of it is going to turn into fat. So when I think of fructose, juice and agave and the fructose part of high fructose corn syrup, and eating too much fruit, especially higher sugar impact food and dried fruit, when I think of that, I really just think of fat because fructose equals fat. And the worst part is it also bypasses your satiety signals because it doesn't trigger the blood sugar response or the insulin response or the leptin response. So your body doesn't know you ate, and it's making fat. So you're still hungry, and you're making fat. But that's a horrible place to be.
Well, what's your thoughts on some of the other foods that are presented as healthier sweeteners? Coconut sugar, xylitol, stevia. Are these indeed healthier, or are they just the latest health imposters?
So I created a spectrum of sugars, and basically the worst are going to be artificial sweeteners, real artificial sweeteners like sucralose and aspartame. So those are just horrific, out, should never be touched. Then kind of the mid-range, they're sugar. Your body's going to treat them as sugar, you know, raw honey or coconut sugar. They're still sugar. You eat them. You raise blood sugar. You raise insulin. They feed candida. They feed bad bacteria. You shouldn't be eating them. Then there's things like monk fruit, xylitol from birch, erythritol, and stevia. These still you must be careful with. They're still not a free-for-all. You need to be really careful with them, and I prefer that you start using sea salt and savory and spicy and cinnamon and vanilla. Start to get used to those things. And again, reclaim your sugar sensitivity.
I think when you do that, you reclaim your taste buds from the expropriation of the commercial or the corporate food industry, which basically has hijacked them.
Yeah, it's you know, I love the salt, sugar, fat book because it's so true. All those things are addictive. You know, when you look at gluten, dairy, salt, sugar, and fat, these are all creating drug-like effects on your brain. You will get hooked to them, and you'll want more and more and more of them. But once you break free of them, and you have to break free of them just like any other drug, and you taste them again, you're like, ooh. You know, it's just like tasting a diet soda. This is horrible. How could I like this? You know, and it gives you a headache. But you get so used to these things, and your taste buds do. They just get hijacked, and you become an addict.
Food manufacturers do acknowledge that they add sugar to the foods they sell in order to generate what they call craveability. To me, it seems clear that they're adding a substance they know is addictive. And they add a lot of sugar specifically to the foods they market most heavily to children. JJ, what goes through your mind and your heart when you see food manufacturers intentionally adding substances to foods they market to kids that are addictive and that make them fat and sick?
There's so many levels to that question, and I guess the one that frustrates me the most as a mom is that when they market these things, there's the obvious ones, these sugar-sweetened cereals that are on the morning shows that you're like, oh, come on. But the ones that look healthy, that seem like they have the health halo where the mom feels like she's doing a good job, are the ones that really upset me. So, again, the fruit juice-sweetened little fruit snacks and the fruit juice-sweetened cereals and the cereals that say whole grain or have some American Heart Association stamp of approval on them because they have X amount of whole grains in them along with this high fructose corn syrup. It's crazy stuff. Crazy.
Yeah, there is a tremendous amount of health washing where products that really are not healthy are made to seem so.
Yes. Exactly. And Brian Wansink talks about that, and I love that, the whole idea of this health halo. No one's going to look at a donut and think that's health food. They're not going to. But they might look at this fruit leather or the granola bar or the cereal or the muffin or the juice or the yogurt and be totally misled because of the packaging. You walk into a health food store and you think it's all good. But, again, agave, honey, crystalline fructose, fruit juice concentrates are all problematic, but where I get the most frustrated is when these things seem like they're health foods and they're not.
Well, I greatly appreciate the work you've been doing and are doing still and will be doing, I know, in the future to expose these nutritional facades and to alert people to what's really going on and help people make healthier choices for themselves and their kids. I understand that the industrialized dairy industry is not your biggest fan. Why?
Yes, I definitely have some not super fans out there in some of these industries. I'd say the GMO soy and corn industry are not too happy with me either. when I put the Virgin Diet out there, which is drop 7 foods, lose 7 pounds, just 7 days, I made the medical elimination diet fun, simple, and sexy. And I wanted to do it in a way where I could get on the media and get people off of some of the foods we know are problematic without having those industries try to take me down. And I will tell you, John, as I went on to some of the big shows, I had to, like, tape special little things saying, I'm not saying dairy is bad. I'm just saying it may not work for you right now. But when I did a show for PBS and in the book, really talk about some of the myths about dairy, this idea that milk does a body good and you need milk for strong bones, despite the fact that the nurse's health study showed that the nurses who drank the most milk had the highest cases of osteoporosis. You know, that whole thing with dairy and weight loss that one researcher kept putting out there, even though no one else could prove his research. And then he was funded by the Milk Advisory Board or the Dairy Council. And yet Walter Willett found that the kids who drank the most skim milk as opposed to full fat milk or no milk had the highest rates of obesity. So there's a lot of misinformation out there, but just like sugar and just like gluten, dairy is a drug. You know, it'd be different if we were having, say, grass-fed and grass-finished raw milk that's been cultured, but that's not what we're having. We're taking skim milk, processing it, putting it into a phony yogurt, and adding in sugar.
I agree with you, and when you say that sugar and milk, dairy products, are drugs, I know what you're talking about. It's actually a very sober topic for me. I grew up eating a tremendous amount of ice cream. My father, as you know, was the founder and owner of Baskin-Robbins, the 31 Flavors ice cream company. He groomed me to succeed him. And although I walked away from the company and his expectations for my life and the money that was involved, I developed quite an emotional attachment to ice cream. I ate a tremendous amount of it growing up. We had an ice cream cone-shaped swimming pool in our backyard. We had a commercial freezer in our home with all of the 31 flavors that were in the stores.
I bet you were popular, John. All the kids must have wanted to go to your house,
yes,
right? I would have. Had I known you then, oh, my gosh, I would have camped out there, because I actually worked at an ice cream parlor growing up because I thought it would help me break my addiction to ice cream. And no, it didn't, by the way.
I worked in stores, too. But I developed this profound emotional attachment to ice cream, and I've worked with that throughout my adult life. And what I do now to satisfy those urges is I eat things like fresh fruit or pieces of dark chocolate, and sometimes I'll blend up a banana with an avocado and cinnamon.
Mm-hmm.
And once every great while, I will indulge with a coconut milk-based frozen dessert. I mean, I definitely have my indulgences, but what have you found there to be keys to dealing with emotional eating?
Yeah, because as I was listening to that, I went, I really loved ice cream, and then I moved into frozen yogurt, and then I finally broke free of that whole thing. And there's definitely the queso-morphine effect of cheese and dairy, but yours was a whole when food is love thing, and that's a whole different situation,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
I think on some level, maybe not to the extreme of you with the ice cream cone-shaped pool and being the heir to the Baskin-Robbins throne, but on some level, we all have that. We all have those ties. I remember for me, every time I would come home from college, my mom would bake me a pecan pie because she knew that I loved them. But I associated that with coming home and relaxing, and I'd eat the pecan pie. I think with a lot of it, what we tend to do is we have this thing that we associate with love, and we try to just pull it off, like just like pulling off a scab, and we bleed, instead of saying, okay, what can I put in its place that's going to give me that same or an even better response that's not food, that could be a different thing? One of the things that I've done with the Virgin Diet is, as we take these foods out, the 7 foods, we swap in things that I think people generally tend to like better. Like you talked about, if you're really craving ice cream, have the 1 gram of sugar sweetened ice cream, or make your own, the coconut one, or make your own avocado raw cacao mousse, which I love. So it's easy swaps for things that you could like better, but then also a lot of times we're not really hungry. We're emotionally hungry, especially if it's sugar. And go find those things that feed you, because a lot of times it's just connection. And I think now more than ever we're craving connection. We're more disconnected than ever. And we need to be around people. And more now with the internet, it's like, it's great on some levels, but on some other levels, I might be working out of my house all day long and never actually see anybody, right? And that's really not good. And it's just not the same being friends with someone on Facebook. Sorry.
Even calling it Facebook, it's not face to face. We're full of tweets and cell phones and I don't know. I think our need for affection and genuine contact and connection with each other is not really met in today's society. There's a certain kind of stress that we have because of a disconnect that we take as normal. I mean, it's so pervasive that we don't question it, but it harms us.
Exactly. So we go for ice cream when we really just needed a hug, or we need to just go sit down and have a tea with a friend, and we just don't do that. And I've really made a point over the last couple years to really get connected to people, and I've put my friends and family at a much higher level of importance, like number one, and actually number one after self-care, because I think the most selfless thing you can do is take care of yourself. It's how you're able to take care of everybody else in your life. But then the second thing are those relationships. And, boy, once you have those and you feed yourself with that, the sugar is not quite as powerful as it was, because you've got the oxytocin and the great hormone responses from your people around you.
Yeah, and then your relationships and the connections that you have with other people actually elicit in a healthy way your own dopamine response and your own secretions of the hormones that uplift you and make you feel good, rather than depending on external sources that actually wear you out.
Yes, and burn out your adrenals.
Yeah. I've heard you talk a lot about weight loss and detox plans, and I've heard you say that there are 5 foods that really should be part of any weight loss or detox plan: lemons, asparagus, cabbage, avocado, and broccoli. I'm wanting to talk about good foods now. Can you explain why each of these are important?
Yeah, why those ones? So, boy, if I start to talk about my superfoods, then I can go on and on and on. And that just shows you, John, there's so many great, yummy, healthy foods out there. Because one of the things I hear from people is, as I talk about these foods to pull out, they're like, that's everything I eat. And I always say, that's great, because you're going to feel so much better so quickly when you start to look at all these other foods.
Yeah.
The average American's eating corn, sugar, soy, dairy, gluten. That's all they eat. It's in everything, because they're eating processed food. So walk back into the produce department and have some fun. And one of the things that we don't think about that is such the easy thing to start changing your life is lemons. Sour actually helps reduce your craving for sweet. So that's the first thing. And we know that lemon juice can help balance blood sugar. So it can help lower the blood sugar response to food. So a big squeeze of lemon, it's great if you have a couple tablespoons of lemon prior to eating, is awesome. And then, of course, you're getting a big hit of vitamin C, which not only is going to help your immune system, and we know sugar competes with vitamin C to enter the cell, so it can lower your immune system in that way. But vitamin C is so critical for the adrenals. The number one vitamin used by your adrenal glands can lower back your cortisol. As you go through very stressful events, that's the big thing that's going to get hit. So there's a couple different reasons that it's so good for you. But again, probably the number one here is how much it helps with blood sugar response. Now, asparagus, when I look at foods, I'm always looking at what's it going to do, how's it going to help you. And asparagus, you know something's up just by the way your pee smells. There's got to be something good going on there, right? It's the sulfur compounds that are doing that. It's great because it's got chicory and fiber in there, so it's great for the GI tract. It's great for liver support, but it's also really incredible for detoxification, because you need sulfur compounds to help you detoxify, which is also why cabbage and broccoli are thrown in here. Cabbage, I think, is one of the most underrated foods out there. It's another thing that's sulfur-rich. And when we look at detoxification, the most critical part of detoxification is being able to pull the bad stuff out of your body. One of the areas of weight loss resistance is toxicity, because if you are not excreting as many toxins as you're taking in, and we're all taking in toxins every day, even if we were in the most pristine part of the world, but if we are not able to excrete as quickly as things are coming in, we're going to store toxins, and we store them in our fat, and then our body, in an effort to protect ourselves, lowers our body temperature and holds on to the fat stores, and that's what can lead to things like cancer and hormone imbalances, diabetes, et cetera. It was interesting I think it was the NHANES study, found that it wasn't the obesity that created the diabetes. It was actually the toxins in the fat cells of the obese people that was leading to the endocrine dysfunction of diabetes. So big issues there with endocrine dysfunction and toxicity. So cabbage is one of those things that's got such great sulfur that, again, is going to help you pull the toxins out of your body. Same with broccoli and Brussels sprouts and cauliflower, being it's anti-cancer. So it's one you want to be eating a lot of. I kind of rotate between broccoli and cauliflower and Brussels sprouts for that reason. What we now know is, in order to make good hormones, have a healthy brain, have a good mood, have good bone turnover, have great skin, hair, and nails, you got to have good fats. So a big shout out to avocado. But the other thing about avocado is that it's got loads of fiber, and it's rich in what we call the master antioxidant glutathione, which is, again, important for detoxifying, but also helps raise all the other levels of antioxidants as well. Glutathione is really the key to everything there. So avocados, when you look at them, great healthy fats, glutathione, loads of fiber. I mean, it's one of the most amazing superfoods, and it makes things just smooth and delicious. You can make amazing mousses with avocado.
It's one of my favorite foods, actually. I love avocados. It's my main source of fat, I think, in my diet.
I do avocado. I do coconut. I love coconut because coconut has these medium-chain triglycerides that help you burn fat, and it's antibacterial, antiviral. So coconut's another one I love. And then chia. I just love chia.
There's one other food topic that I'd like to hear your views on, and that is genetically engineered foods, or GMOs, as they're usually called. Do you think we should be making efforts to avoid eating them? And how important do you find the effort to require them to be labeled?
So the Virgin Diet is really an anti-GMO diet. What I love is, I've been hearing that some doctors now have been prescribing non-GMO diets, which I love hearing this. But boy, our food industry has made that hard to follow because they won't tell us. And, you know, everyone should be suspect with this thing. Why should we be fighting over a right to know on a label? Obviously, if there's some reason they won't tell us, there's something there, right? I mean, it's so ridiculous, I can't believe it. GMOs, I think, are the scariest thing we have going on, right there with artificial sweeteners. It is so clear. If you look at what's going on with infertility, with GI issues, it is absolutely, to me, a clear case of GMOs are not okay and not safe. And at the very least, if we can't get rid of them, at least tell us so we can make the choice. I mean, how could you not have that freedom to know? I think that's crazy.
Well, there's a lot of us working on it, and the Food Revolution Network, which is putting on this summit, is very active in the effort to get labeling, mandatory labeling of GMOs. There's many, many other countries, of course, that already do that. And the fact that we don't in the United States, I think, attests to the degree to which corporations have taken over government and really dictate food policy and agricultural policy in this country.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I'll tell you the saddest thing. I was in Kauai last summer. We were doing a helicopter tour, and I was like, what is that? It was the weirdest crop thing. And I go, what is that? They go, that's the GMO testing grounds. Like, oh, my gosh. And then I was out on a boat, and the boat driver said, oh, yeah, we've been leading campaigns so they can't spray too close to the schools, 50 yards, but we keep getting overruled. I'm like, are you kidding me? It's just crazy stuff going on that you can't, it's unfathomable, really. You can spray pesticides right near small children? Come on.
You know, there are so many crazy things going on in our world. It makes me appreciate the voices of sanity and health and caring that we have, such as yours, JJ. I have so much appreciation for the work you've been doing and the influence that you've been having on millions of people. If there was one thing that you would leave our listeners with, one thing that you would like them to take with them from this conversation, what would it be?
So I think the most important thing that you can get is hope. Because if you don't have hope, then you really don't have anything. And hopefully, as you've been listening to this, and obviously if you're dialed into your community, you know that if you've been struggling with your health or struggling with your weight, you're tired, your joints hurt, you can't lose weight, and you feel like you've been trying to do all these healthy things, but you've been listening to this going, oh, wait, maybe I've been following misinformation, and it can be dramatically different and quickly. And that's the cool thing, is our bodies heal when they're given the right nutrients, and they heal quickly. And things change. I mean, I see people change in a week, and they cannot believe it. What I do is people come in for the weight loss, but they stay because they feel so much better, right? So that's what I'd love people to just know is, like, get your hope back. Things can be so different so quickly.
I so appreciate your energy because you are spreading a sense of hope, as you say, and positive energy and a sense of connection with people. There is a suppressive energy in our society that makes people feel resigned and apathetic and weak and frustrated and resentful and bitter, and you're an antidote to that in such a beautiful way, JJ. It's a pleasure, really, to talk with you and to feel what you give to so many.
Well, thank you. You know, what I've really tried to do is make things simple. Sometimes I think we in health kind of complicate things, make it scary. You know, I think if people just understand it really actually is simple, it's easy, you save money eating this way, you feel better, and then other people start doing what you're doing. So the cool thing is you improve, your family improves, the people around you start to improve, the future generations will improve, and all by you starting to make those simple shifts yourself, which is just great.
We've been talking with world-renowned fitness and weight loss expert J.J. Virgin, the author of the international bestseller, The Virgin Diet. J.J., it is really easy to see why so many people have been inspired by your message, because I think you're like a burst of sunshine that brings warmth and insight to the journey towards health and making health accessible. We want to thank you so much for your time today, for your work, and for your partnership in the food revolution.
Thank you. It has been so fun. Again, I was so honored when you asked me to do this, and I've just loved my time with you and loved getting to know you both better. So thank you.
This concludes our interview, but our work is just getting started. If you feel excited by what you just heard and want to share it with other people in your life, if you want permanent access to 23 more amazing presentations and transcripts, then we have an offer to share. You can get a download and a transcript of the entire Food Revolution Summit, plus a huge collection of bonus resources. If you like, you can also get CDs, members-only courses, and a lot more. This empowerment package is available for a major discount between now and the end of the summit. For more information, please visit foodrevolution.org/empowerment. Again, that's foodrevolution.org/empowerment. Thanks so much for joining us in the Food Revolution. And now we have a pre-recorded message from one of the people whose lives have been touched by the food revolution. This is Carrie Zimmerman.
Hello, my name is Carrie Zimmerman. I am 32 years old and live in Madison, Wisconsin. Currently, I'm feeling so much better than I have in years, and much of that is thanks to the Food Revolution Summit. My parents both died with cancer, mom at 52 years old, dad at 63. As if that wasn't devastating enough, I felt that I was on the same path, leading to disease and premature death. I had my own health concerns since I was a child. I was overweight and then obese by early high school and had significant digestive problems and was diagnosed with IBS. By this time last year, I had been dealing with constant abdominal pain for over a year and a half. It negatively impacted every aspect of my life, and it didn't go away for even a moment. There were many doctors and many tests, but no real answers. The Food Revolution Summit gave me the information, inspiration, and motivation that I needed to improve my diet and lifestyle. The constant pain that I had endured for over 22 months disappeared, and so did the IBS. John, Ocean, and every single one of the speakers, you helped me realize that I could heal myself with food and inspired me to share that information with others. And I will be doing that. I'm currently working on becoming certified as a health coach. You have changed my life, and I am just getting started. Thank you so very much.
If you'd like to share your responses to what you've been hearing, to raise questions or concerns, or to engage with and learn from other Summit participants, please go to and refresh the comments area at the bottom of our broadcasts page. Our next presentation will be an interview with Green America Director and GMO Inside co-founder Alisa Gravitz. It will start at the top of the hour, followed by Mark David at the top of the next hour. Until then, here's some music from our friend Bruce Beckvar.